This is WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Renee House. Renee, it's good to have you here this morning.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
So, Renee, the way the show starts is we begin with a big question, and then we kind of pick out what the pieces are. So who are you? What do we need to know about you to start the conversation?
I'm Renee House. I'm originally from Jersey City, New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
I have family based here. I love the community, the area, my first visit here, and I've been in love with it ever since.
Uh-huh.
I'm a mother of five. I'm a member of the Baptized Church of Jesus Christ under Elder Benson.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much a woman going through that radical change for God.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Nothing spectacular except the glory of God.
You make a softer pitch to start with. Yes, because you, yeah. Anyway, so you move. How long have you been in the Ithaca area?
I've been here currently approximately 5 years total. Again, it's been a true transition from what I'm used to, coming from a city that's loud.
Right. And Jersey City is, you know, part of the metro area. So yeah. So what brought you here?
Going through a lot of emotional and spiritual changes in Jersey City because of the climate and the environment.
Sure.
And that's the only thing I've known for the past, at the time, 38 years.
Right.
And making the transition up here was to get me closer to God.
Okay.
I asked him for a resting place, and here I am in Ithaca, New York.
Ithaca, New York as a resting place. Now, there's an interesting idea, yeah. But I can see it. I can see it. You brought some music with you. And you wanted to start with Charles Jenkins' Awesome?
Yes.
Shall we start there?
Yes.
Do you want to say anything before we play it or after?
This song is a very uplifting song. And it reminds you on why we're here, that we all have a purpose.
Okie doke.
Like hot food, the song's official, nobody's great. for Shawn Mitchell. You got it right with that song, it echoes the heart of scripture. Yeah, they wonder why we so serious. It's cause Jesus Christ is also man, period.
Okay, my Jesus, the Son Christ, the King of Kings, and he's God on earth. My Messiah, born and raised to give us all a second birth. And from heaven he came down to free all that were bound. Oh God, the 4 and 20 fell down, casting down their crowns, saying, thou art worthy, Lord, to receive glory, honor, and power. So every man, woman, boy, and girl, let's make this declaration around the world.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. I'm Eric Clay, your host on the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Renee House. So Renee, you are going through a big transition now. What prepared you to have this experience, and what it's about? What is it about?
It was something that was ongoing as a child, but when you're not reared in that type of position, which I'm very grateful for God for, you go through so many climactic things as you start to grow.
Okay.
And I reached a point in Jersey City before I came to Ithaca where I was tired. I was lost. I got tired of doing the same old things. Being around the same environment, the same people, mm-hmm. not wanting to do what they do, but these are people I grew up with.
Right, right.
And finally, I just asked God to show me where to go, what to do. I was giving up on life itself.
Right.
I had enough. And I wasn't a drug addict or anything like that, but just the environment itself, it was sucking me in.
You were worn down.
Yeah, so just tired.
What wore you down? What made you tired?
Having 5 children, splitting after 12 years.
Ouch.
Not being in a family setting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I got lost. Because all I knew was how to be a mother, a worker,
right?
Take care of, and that
take care of everything.
Yeah, and then have all that pulled from under you, and feeling like no one could understand you. Mm-hmm. They just tell you to stay.
Right.
Don't.
Are the kids mostly grown?
Yeah. 3 of my boys are grown. My eldest son, which is Elder Cameron Pryor, he's 26. My son Enrique, who is 24, and my baby son, who just moved up here with me recently. He is 21, about to be 22 this month. So, and my daughters, Katira and Isis, she'll be 18, and my baby girl is 14. So, they played a major part on why I had to change.
How was that?
Because I didn't want them to have a mom where they weren't comfortable in talking to her, or not being able to come to her and me not have the right answers. I didn't want that kind of lifestyle around my children.
So you felt like you weren't up to the task before, or they wouldn't respect you, or what was the issue that they wouldn't come to you?
Because I went from the baking mom, the slumber party mom,
right,
to the depressed,
I see,
mother, the single mother dealing with the split with their dad.
Right, right.
Him not leaving out of the house and still having his side family, so to speak.
Right, right.
That whole transition of them seeing us not being able to deal after 12 years, it crashed.
Right. You're not being independent yourself, and him not moving on so you could move on, and you're not.
Yeah. And we both had awesome careers. I was training to be a manager for UPS in one of the largest hubs on the East Coast. He was a truck driver. at the time for UPS. So we had awesome careers. We had awesome goals and plans. We were a family unit from the outside.
Right.
Like, you could see it from the outside, but on the inside, it was a mess, a total mess.
Right.
So
right.
it caused, it was the only thing I had known for 12 years.
Right. And how long was it a total mess? From the beginning, or just did it get that way over time?
I can actually say from the beginning. Based on his family and my family, we were raised different. The mother was very protective. She was actually the woman I didn't want to become.
Right.
And that played a very major part for me. My mom is very strong, independent. Mm-hmm. My dad wasn't really there, but we had a stepdad who was awesome. God rest his soul. And that environment on my mother's side, they're very, the women are there are very strong. They're from South Carolina. So they just move forward. And I didn't want to fail in that area. I felt like when I had kids, I'd be married, I'd be have the house and all this other stuff. Sure. And it didn't turn out that way.
Right.
So, and his mom was a little bit opposite. She didn't get an opportunity to do things she wanted to do. So she tried to live vicariously through her children.
Yep.
So every step he made had something to do with mom, had nothing to do with me.
Right.
But it affected his family. So that was a...
So now you see what you didn't see when you got started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big difference.
Yeah.
Big difference.
So what did you discover in yourself that said it's a time for, this is time for a change? What allowed you to make this step?
Something happened inside of me. I broke down. I wouldn't eat. I couldn't sleep.
Right.
When you've spent most of your life trying to form who you are or figure out who you are in a diverse family, such as mine, and not feeling strong enough to do what you see your aunts and your mom and everybody doing.
Sure.
You always feel like you're alone. Type deal. And it's hard to talk to people who say cover that up and keep going.
Yep.
Eventually it catches up with you. And it caught up with me to the point that I was sitting on a kitchen floor pulling my hair out, and that was the first time I screamed out for God. He answered me very fast.
Right so I have this image of you sitting on the floor pulling your hair out, screaming for God. What was your relationship to God or spirituality before that time?
I knew of him. I didn't know him.
Right. Had you participated like in religious church life, but not engaged?
My mom stems from a Baptist background.
Uh-huh.
And then she went into Jehovah's Witness. Then she went into being an Eastern Star.
Oh, I see.
And then she went back to church. But we weren't steady goers, but I got turned off in between the Jehovah's Witness and the Eastern Star thing. So it was more like pretty much finding my own way.
Right. She was the smorgasbord of American religious spiritual life, and you didn't get fed there.
Yeah, the only thing that stimulated me literally as far as spiritually, I was a little girl in South Carolina, and we went to a Baptist church, and I heard a choir sing for the first time. And that never left me. Even to this day, I still talk about that. So I don't know if that was my actual introduction to him, but I figured out praise songs did something for me.
Right.
And it everything after that was like, wow. This.
One of the most important experiences of a spiritual or religious life is that sense that you can immerse yourself in it. You can abandon yourself into it. And praise music often does that. You know, for other people, it might be science or something else, but you just get totally immersed.
Yeah,
totally. And you get lost in it in a good way.
Yeah, it changes your attitude.
So when you were on the floor and you got an answer right away, what was that answer like?
At first, you're not sure. You're like, is this where I'm supposed to go? Is this what he's saying?
What did you think he was saying that you doubted?
That he heard me.
That
was the thing that got me, is that he heard me.
Right.
And when he heard me, it let me know I was talking to the wrong crowd. He had the answers ready for me. I just had to go to him.
You were no longer screaming into the abyss, but you're speaking into something that could echo back to you in a powerful way.
Very powerful. Yeah. I was gone within a week.
Why did you... Okay, I want to go back to that, but why? Okay, why did you doubt that you were hearing something of value?
I didn't value myself, and I felt that I wasn't worthy. Mm-hmm. And at times, I still go through that battle.
Uh-huh.
How could he love somebody like me after all I've done, or the times that I fail, versus it's more times that I fail than I actually succeed in what he wants me to do.
Right.
And you lose value when you're not paying attention to his word like you're supposed to. If you're not studying yourself approved, it's hard for you to accept that after all I've done, he still finds me worthy.
Right. And for you, it seems like failure was bound up in shame as opposed to failure being bound up in striving.
Yeah.
It's a different thing when the failure is bound up in a sense that you're striving, even though you're failing more than succeeding.
Yeah. So it's a big difference. Yeah. Shame played a major, major part for me.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me teary right now. To go from something that came so easy to do, which doing all bad stuff is very easy, but very hard to get out of, type deal. To go from that transition to want to get your life back on track.
Right. And by bad stuff, what do you mean you're trying to, what was the kind of stuff you're trying to get?
From cursing, being a whoremonger, from not being steady, not being consistent, not being able to elaborate on life as a whole of what he has for us versus for what I settled for.
Right. Right.
It just became a loveless path.
Right. Chasing after that which doesn't satisfy and missing standing still to hold on to what will satisfy. Yeah. That's one of the biblical ways to...
Yeah. And it's no peace.
Right.
It's always chaos. And you never know what's really going to happen in the next. And you don't know if that could be your last time waking up or your last time walking down the street. That inconsistency caused a lot of wrong actions or not wrong actions, but more like doing things spontaneously.
Reactively.
Yeah. It was never
purpose or a clear plan or
ever
grounded on anything. Yeah, no, you're out of control.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah. Literally. Yeah, and just reacting to everything. But so many of us are that way, and we don't recognize it until we've worn ourselves down to nothing.
Literally.
Yeah.
I was about 108 pounds.
Wow. You had stopped eating, you had said.
Stopped eating, rarely slept.
Yeah.
Was never much of a drinker, but started to do that. Thank God I didn't go into hard drugs. Right. I couldn't even maintain on marijuana. That just made it even worse because now you're thinking consistently, but at a slower rate.
Right.
And everything is suspicious.
Yeah.
And he took all of that from me. It just became something that never stopped.
Who took all of that from you? God.
Yeah. I asked for what I knew was my issue.
Right.
But still not facing the issue.
Right.
I did all the preliminary steps to what I thought would be, if I had a clearer mind, I'll have a clearer heart. I'll have a clearer way to move. I'll know what to do next. And it wasn't that case. It was more of breaking down what my issues were.
Right.
And trusting him with them.
So maybe there's a connection here. You said things began to happen in about a week.
Yeah.
You were ready. So what did you, how did you, what was it that you entrusted? What did you feel coming back at you, and how were you able to make a move in a week? What was that move?
Yeah. When you're in a situation that you didn't feel comfortable in anyway.
Uh-huh.
And you kind of knew not to go into it, but you felt that was the only way to get by.
You didn't know how to get out of what you didn't know you got into.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And you trust people, like I said before, that you grew up with. And you go through all this loyalty-ish thing with people, not with yourself.
Right.
And showing the disloyalty to myself opened the door for them to take advantage of that. Because we're not going to be friends and walking down the street and somebody's trying to hurt you and I'm going to stand by.
Right.
It wasn't that type of situation, but that's the best example I could give.
But you're going to hang in there with them even if they're bringing you down, even because they have needs and you can help them in some way.
That's just in my nature.
It's I have a my partner refers to that as morbid flexibility. It's the being so flexible that it will kill you. And she points that out to me sometimes when I'm trying to accommodate other people more than maybe helpful and not looking after what it's the bigger picture.
Yeah,
as you had said before, you're not seeing the bigger picture.
It's just an everyday thing of being drained.
Yeah. But you found that you could. You didn't stand up. You fell down.
Mm-hmm. I hit the floor.
You hit the floor, and you hit the floor with enough sense to take some next steps. I guess you found the resolve, mm-hmm. hitting the floor. I mean, it's almost like a textbook. You really just bottomed out.
Literally.
And you didn't have to bottom out as far as some people did.
Yeah.
And what happened in a week? What did you move on in that next week?
I started to pray.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say anything to anybody. I became more reserved and more focused.
Kept your counsel to yourself?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I found myself going into the bathroom in unexpected times,
uh-huh.
closing the door,
right,
and just praying.
That was your time, your space, yeah.
And I would come out, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. And I would like kind of wait people out. And finally, I went to my friend and I said, look, I have to go. I can't do this. I need to go. I can't get it together for myself. So
in this space.
This is not going to happen.
Yeah.
So whatever the plan is, it'll fall apart anyway.
Right.
Because I know this isn't what he wants for me.
Right.
And I have children down the block that I want them. I want to see my grandchildren. I don't have any yet, but I want to be able to be there for my daughters.
You want to be alive and healthy and in relationship.
And I need my children in my life.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. And he, surprisingly, he said, okay. And that's when I knew God had heard me. Because I thought this was going to be a big, dramatic blowout.
Breakup scene or whatever.
And it wasn't. Yeah. He helped me get on the bus. He took me to the bus station. He talked to me. We spoke.
Uh-huh.
And I got on the bus, and it was so clear to me. And I was like, you did this for me.
Right.
Totally opposite of what I expected.
Right.
And I fully trusted him in that situation.
Right. And he respected you more than you thought he could, and more than you had respected yourself just a few days or weeks before.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Big time.
Yeah. So where'd you get on the bus to?
I got on the bus to come here.
Uh-huh.
I called my stepmom and my sister and told them not to tell my dad. And I told them I didn't want to be there anymore. And what's crazy is I had been emailing them and calling them 2 months in a row. I guess it wasn't time for me to move at that point.
Right, but you were already reaching out, but before you had actually bottomed out.
Yeah,
that
cry for help.
Yeah.
And finally, when I called and let them know, my dad got on the phone and said, I'll be here to pick you up. And I'll never forget it. He picked me up 4:30 in the morning. A young man had died by the gas station, I believe,
uh-huh.
that night. I'll never forget it. It was a young man who was killed by a cop because he reached for a gun.
Sean Greenwood.
I'll never forget it because when I got off the bus and my dad went to drive, I saw the cop cars and stuff up the block on State Street. Yeah. And I was like, wow, it's everywhere. But it's where you are here in your mind and in your heart.
Right. So all the same stuff can be going on around you, but if you're in a different space, you can manage it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's cut to music. I want to come out. Well, you've got a fascinating story, and you tell it well in terms of just being really knowledgeable about what the steps are. What music should we play next?
You Paid It All by Wes Morgan.
Okay, here we go.
Unselfishly died on Calvary. Oh, how you gave your life for me. Bruised, scorned, crowned your head with thorns. No greater love performed for me. Nailed in your hands, nailed in your feet. Pierced in your side, could barely breathe. Could have came down, yet you remain.
and still I hurt you. Lost so many times, crucified you again. But I repent, forgive me for my sin. You played it all up on the cross. You bled and died, cause I was lost. So here I am, surrendering all. Lord, hear my cry, on my knees I fall. You paid it all, oh, oh. You paid it all, oh. In exchange for the blood you shed for my sins,
yeah.
So I surrender my heart, my life, my all, as a living sacrifice, Lord. I give up everything that's not pleasing in your sight, so I can have everlasting life.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Renee House. So, Renee, you know, the name of this song is You Paid It All, and that's a reference to God, having mm-hmm. Jesus, particularly on the cross, having mm-hmm. paid it all.
Yes.
What does that mean to you now? You know, what does it mean for him to have paid it all, and what were you doing before that you didn't get it?
When coming up, you always saw the cross, you always saw Jesus, mm-hmm. and you hear people make reference to that Jesus died for our sins.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Until you actually know what that means, it's just another paraphrase. It's just like
another
metaphor for, yeah. And for me, the encounter that I've had with God, to know that what I was so ashamed of before,
mm-hmm.
he had already died for me for that. He already knew what I was going to go through
right.
before I came to him.
Right.
And he loved me enough to cover me through all of that to get where I am today.
Right, right, right. And to cover, okay, let's just back up here. A lot of people don't realize that the cross was an execution machine that was used by the Roman government, and yes. it was a particularly brutal and shameful machine. And the story around Jesus is that he could face that even reluctantly, because there is some reluctance, but could face it and go through it, mm-hmm. and then without a guarantee. The resurrection is not necessarily a guarantee. It depends on the gospel that you read, which version. But the resurrection story then happens. Now, when you don't... What I heard in your story is you were struggling with your own shame
mm-hmm.
and guilt, but you couldn't produce your own resurrection.
No. No.
And by giving up the fight, by giving up your ego, you found something in faith that you didn't know before.
Yeah, big time.
Right.
to when you couldn't trust yourself on what you would do,
right?
Because you did things that you thought you would never do.
Right, that which I would do, I don't do, and that which I yeah. do, I'd rather not do.
So, yeah. until after the fact,
yeah.
and you don't think about the consequences or what you might carry with you from that experience. Mm-hmm. What I found with Christ was that even though they already had the prescript from Moses. They already knew he was coming. They believed up until a point that he's coming, and he did this, and he did that. Mm-hmm. But for him to come back from the dead, impossible. And for you to kill the very thing that you had in practice, the thing you taught your children, the very Messiah that you gave credit to, and then for him to actually show up and you still doubt him, that was a big metamorphosis for me.
Uh-huh,
that kind of where I was, okay, this is real. This doubt thing we have with God, until we need him, till right. something is traumatic,
right?
Even when
you have it, you still doubt. That was your yeah, first point. You weren't sure
that this was the way to go.
Yeah,
because of what I experienced in my bloodline.
Uh huh.
What was so sporadic about the up and down for me in that whole situation, mm-hmm. when somebody finally sat me down because they saw the turmoil I was having. Even when I got here, I mean,
yeah, you're still in turmoil.
It was. I went from 175 to 108, like I told you.
Right.
And for my family to see me, I still walked in shame.
Right.
I had my head down, like.
Right. Yeah. I have come home in defeat, or come yeah, back to
just yeah, just yeah. not here.
Yeah.
And yeah. I know he got me here, but what now? Now what do I do? What do I do now?
Mm-hmm.
And my dad, Pastor White, his wife, Assistant Pastor Audrey White. Though I ran to them trying to get understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes because family knows you,
right,
they tend to stem more on this, your flesh, the flesh, than the actual experience of what you're saying to them.
Well, and also oftentimes they try to rescue you rather than help interpret you.
Yeah. It's a big difference.
You need somebody to help explain where you are, and where you are may be hellish. And the family member oftentimes doesn't want to see that or say that.
It's like, again, it's going right back to screaming
uh-huh.
for help.
Right.
And nobody hears you because you're not screaming like everybody else screams. You're not showing
it
in a way.
Or they don't know what to do with your screams. Usually, yeah. My sense is that most people hear the screams, but they are so undone by them. They don't know how to respond, and they don't want to go there because they don't want to get sucked into what they don't know how to get out of.
But it's some people, I believe that, but this is where the extra turmoil came
sure.
into because now you're looking at titles
uh-huh.
instead of looking at people,
right,
and you're thinking, well, in my head I was thinking, well, they know what to do,
they why know aren't him. They helping you
yeah, yeah, they know him right. personally,
right?
So if I ask them this, they should be able to answer to me. So what did I do? I went from not just being oppressed, I became judgmental.
Right, against them because they weren't helping you.
Yeah, I thought that if they could show me the scripture, they can tell me how to talk to him or tell me how to walk with him.
Mm-hmm.
And what I had to find out was that's not what he wanted. He wanted me to do what I did the first place,
figure it out.
To go to him right. myself
right.
and not have a mediator in between.
Right.
And that transition alone, from him breaking me off from my family.
Uh-huh.
Once again, now I'm in Ithaca, broken away from my family.
And your kids at that point are all
all in Jersey.
In Jersey City.
And it became like I tried to depend on marijuana again. I became a workaholic. I would try to go to church and still felt uneven. Mm-hmm. I couldn't mm-hmm. balance myself out.
Right.
So what I did was I would work long hours, 40 hours. I was working in Cornell at the RPCU as a janitor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And go to sleep for like 3 or 4 hours. Wake back up, stay up a couple hours trying to figure out. Me and my sister would sit down with the Bible. We're going back and forth. I'm still cursing. I'm still going off. I'm still upset. I'm like, I don't understand this. This transition is very hard. Finally, it clicked that I had to be honest with myself again and say, you can't straddle the fence. You have to make a decision. You can't be over here and be over here at the same time.
So what does that mean? Just to help me understand what that image means. To be over here and over there at the same time.
I'm saying I want to walk with God. Mm-hmm. But everything about me, it's like certain things I won't do because of God, but other things I still have to do because that's how I get through. I'm still right. Not depending on him completely.
Right. So you're still depending on your knowledge of how to manage yourself rather than the trusting that you'll find a new way to manage yourself.
Yeah. And reverting back to old things. Yep. Not as drastic as it was before, but still at the same token, mm-hmm. It's the same thing, sin is sin.
Yeah.
So I had to go and tell my parents the truth that I didn't want to straddle the fence. I'm going to go back out and figure this out again. And I went back out and I met someone who is currently my husband now. Mm-hmm. And that was he's not a mistake, but it was one of the biggest transitions in my life that I didn't know at the time I really wasn't prepared for.
Right.
Because now I just added a whole nother issue.
Yeah, a whole layer of complexity and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, to everything I was trying to get out and figure out what was good and what was not.
Right.
To what I was going through already. So it became a big ball of confusion, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. when I had just got some type of clarity, which I did to myself once again.
Right.
But
you were driving the confusion at that point.
Yeah.
And you knew it.
Yeah.
And before, you weren't owning it in Pretty Jersey much. City that you were driving, and you were on the floor as a part of a way to begin to get yourself up and begin to own it, but not completely.
Yeah, it's a big difference now. Yeah. I take total responsibility. Does it feel good on a daily basis? No.
Uh-huh. Are you always right would be the other question.
Yeah.
Probably not always right about
responsibility. Most likely not.
Because we overdo it. We go too far one way and then too far the other.
Yeah, they're never finding that common balance, mm-hmm. of, are you really listening to what the other person is saying? Are you really looking for help, or you're just looking for an excuse for you to go do something else?
Right.
Type deal. And that choking feeling of non-consistency, mm-hmm. drove me back to being a workaholic. So now I'm back in the church. Now I'm over here, and I'm going through depression now. Not knowing it's depression, the constant sleeping, not wanting to talk, hiding myself in the house, not wanting to be bothered with anybody. It's the same shameful act, just in a whole nother manner.
Right, but it's not the same kind of experience where you don't sleep and you can't eat, which is another expression, mm-hmm. for depression for some people. You just went to a different
form of it. Yeah. And it became overwhelming.
Yeah.
To the point that I would go on the job within 30 days. Being a supervisor's position, and that's where I have to give God praise, because once I got here, I've never been homeless. As far as I'm concerned, I've never left. I never slept outside. I never went hungry. Yeah. I never went without a great job. I never went. He always sent me somebody to help me.
Right. As long as you kept going.
As just not stopping, even in my most pitiful moments of like, oh, I could just do this and do that. He still sent me somebody to say, all right, mm-hmm. calm down, baby girl. Take a deep breath. It's okay.
Yeah.
We all go through this. And that's why when I hear the song from Wes Morgan, You Paid It All,
right.
it means a lot to me. Because I don't know a man that would actually get on the cross and die for me,
right.
especially the way that he died. And the fact that he's God's son, like, he loves all of us the same. And I find with people... Not all people, but I find with most people, they have this thing about God will love me more than he loves you. Right. I ran into that a lot.
We confuse our need to be special with our need to be loved.
Yeah, it's that was the confusing part for me, because you're saying Jesus loves everybody, but mm-hmm. you're telling me that you're more special than me.
Right, right.
How that's a big contradiction. And I finally met a friend who said to me, he was like, why do you just let people tell you things? How do you, when you went to school, how did you learn how to do math? I said, I had to study. He's like, why aren't you studying your Bible? Why aren't you going to find out for yourself? Stop trying to get people to lead you in a direction and you don't even know if it's wrong or right.
Right.
And from that moment on, I didn't make debates about the Bible. I didn't try to have an argument with anybody. But if it didn't sit well with my spirit, I'm going to look. I'm going to find out.
Right, right.
And because of that enlightenment altogether, it opened up a whole nother facet.
Right.
For me, right. Period.
Right. And you have just actually described a moment in a person's life which often doesn't get described very well. So you have the authority and the power in yourself to make that own decision. Now, sometimes arguments and debates are useful, but there comes a point where it's usually just a matter of egos duking it out.
Yeah.
But up to a certain point, it's useful to clarify things you didn't necessarily know. But then you have to take your own counsel and go back into yourself and sit with these things and see where they come down, where they settle out. And that's empowerment. And a lot of people don't understand that this process, which, you know, we're not denying that there are institutional issues, that there are big issues in the world. But until we have a sense of our own power to address what peace we can, we're not going to be very useful making the institutional changes.
No.
Because oftentimes the institutions are deceptions that we have to sort out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's your story is very, very powerful.
It was a lot of I can actually say that God's grace and mercy on a daily basis that's provided to us, we don't know what he saves us from. We don't know who we could have ran into and lost our life. We don't know if we got on the bus, we could have ended up in a crash. The things that he saves us from that we don't know about are the things that keeps me going.
And the things that we experience that we are not aware of.
Yeah.
Which is the other side. We walk around in a bubble.
Yeah,
and we can't not because of our limits. Yeah,
big.
Yeah.
It's a big.
And yet you can trust that you can be in that bubble, and you will be all right. It may not work out the way you wanted it to.
Yeah,
but you'll be all right.
Just trusting him and having the faith in him alone.
And it makes you able to hear and to learn and all those other things that you were talking about. What would you like to listen to next? We have Tiff Joy and The Promise. Jessica
Joy.
Reedy. Okay.
Yes, yes.
Here we go.
Beauty for ashes, and joy for your sadness, strength in your weakness, and hope when you're held. He'll be healing for heartache, restore every heartbreak, freedom and bondage, and each sin he will pardon. Every promise that he made, it will come to pass. He won't go back on his word. Every promise that he made, supplying the hard times, the light in your dark nights, faith in the valley,
That was Tiff Joy and The Promise. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Renee House. So Renee, as you were experiencing these, the need to actually take charge of your life and take responsibility, but also responsibility not to be in control, but to trust. Taking charge is a matter of trust, I think, more than control.
Yeah.
You met your soon-to-be husband, and that added a layer of complexity. But how did you? Many people, when they get into a romantic relationship, they lose sight of their personal boundaries or their personal challenges. How did you maintain that, or how have you? What have you done to kind of hold on to that? Because it seems like you have.
I'm very surprised about my marriage to my husband and a lot of things I've dealt with that I wouldn't tolerate normally.
How so?
I'm more of a person when something comes to me and it's just too much, I walk away. I was a runner.
Uh-huh.
If it was a problem here, I'm gone.
Right.
That's going too far. I got to go. I don't want to, that's too much. Oh, no, you did this and I didn't like it. And I was a sabotager.
Right.
Very good at sabotaging relationships.
So if you weren't happy, you'd find a way to make the other person's fault.
Yeah, and just whatever. It just didn't matter to me.
Yeah.
I didn't value love at the time. Cause I didn't love myself, so I didn't, there's no way in the world I could have loved somebody else. That's just not going to go together at all.
Right.
And that was another truth I had to face.
Okay.
Being scared to love.
Right, scared to love and scared to be loved.
Yeah, it seemed to be a formality. Watching women in my family on both sides, watching my dad at the time while he was in the world.
Yeah,
women were the weakest vessels to me on earth.
In terms of their relationships with men.
Yeah. And that was something I never wanted. I wasn't attracted to it. I didn't want to deal with it. Just seem like a headache for women. They always seem like they got their hearts broken and the man gets to go off and
find another woman.
Yeah. And they call it a day. And if a woman did it, she got called a name that wasn't too cute.
Right.
But it became a safe zone for me.
So what is different about your attitude in this relationship? What is making it different?
The one transition that seemed to be really tough for me was dealing with someone who's like me.
Okay. And why was that tough?
Because for me, I didn't have that somebody to be able to stand there and take what I had to say or do.
And he could do that because he's enough like you that he could recognize what he was seeing.
Yeah, I don't think he recognizes yet because he's a lot younger than me.
Okay.
But I can see it. That's what formed our friendship.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, wow. I was like, you're me all over again. That's crazy. But the transition he's going through as a young man who just lost his mom from cancer, being uprooted, brought to Ithaca as well, not being able to fit in with the society just as of yet, unless he placed himself in a situation like I did in Jersey City.
Right.
It's like him going through almost everything I've been through except for the loss of my mom. My mom's still here.
Right.
And on top of that, being a young black man, still trying to find out who he is.
Right.
And now here he has this older woman with children already.
Lots of kids, yeah.
And she pretty much is trying to come out where he's going in.
Right.
To not realizing it at the time. He knows God for himself, same background as me, mm-hmm. but they're, I don't know, they're Baptist or whatever, but their family is church rooted.
Uh-huh.
So he's familiar with God. He's just not ready for God,
mm-hmm.
Which became the biggest stumbling block for us because one's going this way and the other one's going that way.
Right.
Type deal. I love him very much, but there's still the clash.
Uh-huh.
And that's where God's working on me at. How to deal. How to get through. How to maintain. How not to... We both internalize. I internalize pain. I internalize something. I won't say anything right off the bat. I let it build up.
It festers.
Yeah, and which is not good.
Right.
It's not good at all. But I figure if I say it now, it's going to come out wrong. If I say it in anger, it's definitely going to come out wrong. Mm-hmm. So I became more at peace with situations by not letting certain things bother me until a point. And now I'm going off like a mad woman. And
what does that mean?
The people don't realize when people lash out, it's not because they want to hurt you. There's some pain involved.
Yeah,
in that.
Yeah. I mean, that's yeah, yeah. People who take it personally are just missing the point.
Yeah, it's another form of screaming out.
Right. It can hurt people, but it's not intended to hurt in most instances.
Yeah. Not at all. Yeah, yeah. But I noticed that the humbling process God has you going through, mm-hmm. not to be easily offended by your brother.
Right.
Don't speak in anger. Don't let it rest in your bosom. Don't be a fool. And that's the hardest lesson I've had mm-hmm. with dealing with a younger male, being married to a younger male, what's mm-hmm. required of a wife,
right?
How to deal with your husband who's not ready to walk with God.
Right.
The naysayers and the pointing and the picking and the it's not, your marriage is not biblical. And it's just...
So it's across gender. How much younger is he than you?
I just turned 43, and he's on his way to be 31.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, that's, yeah, the only thing that's different is that's you're the older one as a female. That kind of age difference between men and women, with men being older.
Yeah, it's perfectly fine.
A lot of history on that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But it's, yeah, but yeah, no, I hear you clear. I hear you clear. So, you have had to make some discernment about whether this is a person with whom you can let it go. Mm-hmm. Or whether you need to hold it back, and that is both loving him and loving yourself. Mm-hmm. There's also recognizing the story that your journey is not his journey, mm-hmm. and you can't impose it on him because that doesn't do. That's living under the same oppression you lived under before you came here from Jersey City.
Yeah.
This is powerful stuff. I want to make a transition here. Renee, okay. as we move into the last portion of the show, and we've got just a couple of minutes, what do you do on a daily basis, weekly basis, monthly basis, yearly, to restore yourself physically, emotionally, intellectually, and those add up to spiritually, in my book, you know, how you do those, and how do you know you need to?
What's been the real climactic thing is that soon my woman's ministry TV show will be on Channel 13. Uh-huh. Pastor Benson is putting me in transition for that. We lived in a shelter for a period of time, mm-hmm. and I ran into women.
Right.
Other women. And other young men as well. And when I learned that my story is so common, I really wasn't alone.
Right.
And that there were other people that actually needed help with some of the things that I went through.
Right.
I find in ministering to them, I was ministering to myself. It became much easier to make the transition known. When a young woman comes and they think, how are you doing this? And I go, I'm not the one doing it. I'm just trusting.
Right. I'm making choices, but I'm not driving this truck or this life.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but I'm making choices within it.
Yeah, so and I'm making it known that don't look at me as I got it all together, because I don't.
Right.
I don't have it all together. I got days where I'm just like, ugh, I can't do this right now.
But I'm comfortable in this space, and you're not yet comfortable. But when you're comfortable, you'll be able to live more like I am, and I'll be even more comfortable and moving on to something else.
Yeah, it's a learning process. Me being able to watch other women mm-hmm. who I didn't know went through what I've been going through.
Sure.
And then being able to help other women who are going through what I consider the behind the wall phase.
Right. Right. Well, or the prior to the kitchen floor pulling your hair out phase, mm-hmm. before you were in some sense crucified mm-hmm. and accepted that you were being ended. That your life was as you knew it was being ended, though you didn't know what was going to come out of it.
Yeah.
And you can be with other people whose lives are ending and they don't know how they can come out of it.
Yeah. It's a big thing. Like, dying to oneself is a major, major change.
Yep.
A radical change.
Right. Renee, it has been wonderful to get to know you and wonderful to hear your story.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Good luck with your show.
Thank you.
With your show. So what would you like to end with?
My all in all.
Okie doke. And we will close out.
You are my life. You are my love. You are my reason. You are my tempest, in the tempest, you're the shelter.